morning. I wanted to make sure to start promptly for two reasons. One, because we do want to stop at 11 for the moment of silence. And second, because we have so much to cover, we have to finish off the topic from last week and go through the topic for this week. So there's an awful lot for us to get through here. We are on week four's topic, the topic of canceling an appointment, canceling a purchase. And as Loretta noted, I do hope to offer a series November 25th, December 2nd, December 9th. Thank you to those who have sent topics. I have a few ideas based on what's been sent. Trying to figure out which topic would be good for 3 weeks, because some of those topics are really like year-long topics. So I'm not sure exactly what to do, but hopefully we'll be in touch soon with the topic. And for those of you who have not heard Rabbi Ziering yet, he's fantastic, and make sure to sign up for the second hour as well. Okay, our topic of canceling an appointment, canceling a purchase. Last time we began by talking about restaurants and their cancellation fees and the justification for having a cancellation fee and the harm that is done to a business when people cancel. We talked about making an appointment, planning to cancel it, and we said that is indeed a problem. You know, if you let them know, if everybody is aware of what's going on, that's one thing. As opposed to making an appointment and they think that you actually are showing up for dinner at the restaurant, they think you're showing up at the doctor's office, and you are intending the entire time that if something else works out, you're going to drop it, or you'll be a no-show, even worse. That is a problem because one is supposed to be honest and upfront in one's speech. You should say only that which you mean. That was what we saw in sources 2 and 3 on the sheets. Loretta, thank you for making copies. We then moved into talking about canceling a purchase and the distinction between canceling a purchase at an early stage when there has been no act of kinyan, kinyan being the act that shows this is a firm transaction, and canceling it after there's been a kinyan. And what we noted from sources 4 and 5, and I summed up 6 and 7, what we noted is that if a person cancels at a very early stage, when there's been no agreement to purchase at all, so the sages aren't happy. That's an inappropriate thing to do. Once you've said you're going to do it, you should go ahead and do it. However, at the end of the day, you can cancel. You haven't even shaken on it, so to speak. If you've already done the act of kinyan, then there's a greater penalty that's what's called a mishapara, and that is the curse that we read about last time, in which the person may have to go to the rabbinical court, or it may be done out in public in the synagogue, and they will declare that the God who punished various figures biblically is also going to punish people who don't stand by their word. So it's a much more harsh response to this person who cancels. We discussed, I had it included in the email that I sent out, the difference between canceling a purchase before you buy it and then returning the item to the store afterwards. And I do believe that they're substantively different. Obviously, if the item's defective, it's entirely different. You didn't get what you thought that you were going to get. But even where you return it without a defect, it's still different. Because when I make an agreement saying, I am going to buy this, and we shake on it, or we do whatever is the norm for such a declaration, I have made a commitment of, I am going to buy this thing. And therefore, I have to follow through on buying it. When I buy something, though, from a store with a known policy of accepting returns and so forth, buying it is not a declaration of, I am now keeping this forever. It's possible to argue that there's actually less of a commitment involved in the purchase in terms of keeping it. As I'm saying this, I'm realizing this could be a very long discussion. I don't really want it to be. So I'm gonna cut myself off there and move back to the topic at hand. And that is the question of canceling an appointment, because we do distinguish between canceling a purchase and canceling an appointment. If you take a look at your sheet, source number 8. A Mishnah, that core text of the Talmud, outlining Jewish law, says the following. If someone hires craftsmen, and one side tricks the other, and what they mean, as I added in brackets, is they renege. You hired them and said, I want you to show up and do work. And then You renege on it. You say, nah. They can only complain against each other. Now, we can always complain against each other. What does that mean? They can only complain against each other. But the idea of complaining against each other is actually, as explained in various sources, that they can make a public complaint. Meaning that they would actually go to the shul, they'd go to the synagogue, and before the public Torah reading, someone would give a bang on the table and announce, so-and-so hired me to do work, and he backed out. Now, I can't imagine that that was where the conversation ended. Yeah. He makes the announcement, so-and-so did this and backed out. But this is a complaint that one is able to lodge because they reneged. Now, mind you, what reneging here means isn't they called me on Tuesday and said they need me to show up on Thursday to plow their field, and then they called me on Wednesday and they canceled. That's not what we mean. What we mean is they called me on Tuesday and said they want me to plow on Thursday, and I show up Thursday morning and they're not there, or the field has already been plowed, or the field isn't ready for plowing, so I lost whatever I was going to do that morning. Whatever other work I would have had is gone. That's the case of reneging on an appointment level one. But I'm getting ahead of myself. That's where they do back out before. That's not where they show up. The case where they actually show up is the next case, source number 9. Sorry. That's what happens when you try to cram in too much. If one hires workers to dig, you hire workers to dig ditches, and rain comes and fills it with water, okay, fills the land that you have with water, then if he checked the land on the previous night, then the loss is theirs. If he did not check the land on the previous night, the loss is the employer's, and he pays as one would pay an idle laborer. Okay, I hired them to dig ditches, I hired them to plow, whatever the circumstance is, and then something happened to prevent them from being able to do the job. If I checked in advance, and there was no problem, so there was no way I could have notified them, it's not my responsibility, that's the way life is. However, if I didn't check, and then when they showed up, they couldn't do the job, then I have to pay them the way you would pay an idle laborer. What does that mean? What is an idle laborer? What are we talking about? Sorry?
Minimum wage.
Well, not necessarily minimum wage. Sorry? No, but it means what you would pay somebody to not show up to work. Right? I'm thinking of Groucho Marx and Animal Crackers, and how much would it cost for you to pay, for you to play, and how much would it cost for you not to play. The idea is that there's a certain amount that you would pay somebody to sit down. It's not the same as what you would have to pay them in order for them to go to work and to do things for you, because they don't have to do anything. They get to sit at home. But there's a certain amount of money you would have to pay them to take the day off. And that's the amount, Sandy.
Does it imply that if you check the night before that you notified the workers the night before? Is that what's implied here?
Well, the idea is that if he checked, if he checked on the previous night and he notified them, yeah.
So it's implied that he would have...
Correct. Or he checked and there was nothing wrong.
Right.
Confidence.
What do you mean?
Someone who could have checked doesn't really know what the job entails.
That's interesting. What if he checked the night before, he didn't find anything that he thought would keep them from working, but that was because he didn't really know. So I think if it's something that really is a technical expertise, then it's not his problem. In other words, he did the due diligence that he's supposed to do. It's not as though you could expect more. If anything, if the worker knows that something is required, the worker has to say so. Example, separate from workers. You show up to the doctor's office, and there was some test that they were going to run, and they didn't tell you you have to fast that morning. So who's to blame? It's the doctor's office that is to blame. It's not the patient who's responsible to do the research and find out that they shouldn't have eaten that morning. It's the fault of the physician. So I would suggest that if there's something technical that your average person wouldn't be aware of, the onus is on the worker to notify that that's going to be a requirement. Sheila?
What if the case is the other way around? And then
that the person who needs the work done is waiting, and the person who's doing the work never shows up.
Right.
Right.
So what about where the worker backs out? That's this other series that we've been saying we should do at some point on running an ethical business. And the question of what happens, clearly it's unethical to not show up. That's easy. The question is, what would the penalty be? And that depends a little bit on the nature of the work that was involved. Just to tell you briefly, because it's an interesting point, there's a tension within Judaism when it comes to hiring employees. Because on the one hand, you make an agreement with somebody, you're depending on them, they should follow through. But on the other hand, we have severe prohibitions against enslaving people. Right? There is a certain biblical framework for slavery, but outside of that, and that is a very limited application, but outside of that framework, you're not entitled to enslave somebody. If I'm going to hire somebody and insist they have to show up to finish that job, effectively I am enslaving them. They don't have the freedom to walk away, unless they do have the freedom to walk away, which is the answer ultimately. But it creates this kind of sort of at-will employment scenario that, again, requires greater discussion. It's not something we're going to handle on one foot now. But the point that we are seeing here is that when we dealt with purchases, we said that if it's before the kinyan, before the handshake, before you've said this is a definite deal, so it's not appropriate to back out. The sages aren't pleased, but it's not appropriate to back out. Whereas after the kinyan, it becomes more serious. There's a curse involved. When it comes to backing out of appointments, it's different. When it comes to backing out of appointments, if you back out in advance, the guy gets to complain against you publicly in the synagogue. If you back out that day, once he's actually showed up, then you have to pay him. So for which one are the penalties more severe? Backing out of the appointment or backing out of the purchase? Sorry? The appointment, right, says Stephen. The backing out of the appointment is indeed more severe. If you back out in advance, they get to complain against you in shul. If you back out and you didn't back out in advance, then you actually have to pay them. Why are we more strict in terms of the penalties for backing out of an appointment? You're wasting his time. You're affecting a lot of people. He can't get it back. If I back out of a purchase, so it could be there was somebody else who wanted to buy it in the interim. You know, during that period of time between when I made the agreement and when I was supposed to close on the deal. It's true. There is that element of loss. But with the appointment, it's for sure gone. And especially if he shows up that day, what's he going to do? Where's he going to find work now? So there's a more severe penalty because what I've done to him is effectively worse. But that brings me to the last point. And that is, am I expected to take a loss for this? Right? Am I expected to take a loss? Let's say I made the appointment, or I said I was going to buy the item, but for me to follow through would cost me something. Let's say I made an agreement saying that I was going to... Let's stick with appointments. I said I was going to buy a particular item. I was in the store, and we had this conversation, and I said I'm going to buy it, and I shook on it, that's a purchase. Let's try that again. An appointment. I said that I wanted to hire a plumber, and I spoke to somebody, and I said, please show up on Thursday for my whatever situation it is. Then I'm talking to somebody else, and I mentioned that I hired the plumber, and they said, how much is it going to cost you? And I said, it's $150 just for him to show up. And they said, are you kidding? I know somebody who will show up, and he'll be $75, and he's great, and he's done the work, and he's worked for me, and so on. So I can get a better price elsewhere. Am I allowed to cancel in advance? Not that he shows up and there's some other guy doing the work, but am I allowed to cancel in advance to save the $75?
Yes.
The heads are shaking yes. Sorry? So to a certain extent, you have to define in advance. You do have to define in advance. That's absolutely true. Give him the option of matching. That's an interesting idea. Maybe you tell him, listen, I found somebody cheaper. Maybe. Yes.
shop around first before you make a commitment.
So that would be nice, but sometimes there's information that you just don't have. Stephen says, shop around first before you make a commitment, but that isn't always practical. Sometimes you do find out something that you just didn't know before. You made a call to somebody, you left them a message, and they got back to you, but they got back to you after you had already hired somebody. So are you now stuck because the information came in late? So take a look at source number 10. This is regarding purchases, but it will have applications for appointments as well. Rabbi Moshe Isserles, writing in the Ashkenazic portion of the Code of Jewish Law, says, one should keep his word even without a formal transaction, only words. And that goes back to what we've already said. The sages are not pleased with one who backs out, buyer or seller, where the price remains static. But where the price changes, not even bad faith is involved. Some say that even with a fluctuating price, one may not back out, because backing out would involve bad faith, and so seems correct. He's a little dicey on it, right? He brings you multiple points of view as to whether you can back out based on the fluctuating price, and that brings me to number 11. Number 11, Rabbi Yechiel Michal Epstein, writing a little more than 100 years ago, says, some say that one who retracts because he is afraid the item will be ruined, not a case of a better price, but he's afraid the item is going to be destroyed for some reason, and he wants to back out before he makes the purchase, he's not required to accept a mishapara. He does not accept that curse, even where the item is not yet ruined, and he's only concerned that it might be ruined. Mishapara was enacted only for a case where there is no loss, and one backs out only due to fluctuation in value. He says if you back out due to fluctuation in value, that's where the mishapara exists. That's his last sentence is the key. He says, if a person backs out because they can get a better deal somewhere else, the price dropped for the goods, he finds a better price from another plumber, he says, no, you're not entitled to back out. You made an agreement, you stick to the deal. Yeah. That's Rabbi Epstein's statement. He says, if the price is better elsewhere, too bad. You stick to the commitment that you made. That's the way it works sometimes in life. That's number one. There's a separate discussion, though, if the item is going to be useless to you. And if the item is going to be useless to you, then the rules change. And that's what I brought you in Numbers 12 and 13. We'll take a look at 12. A man gave money for wine. He wanted to buy wine. He gave them the money in advance. He then heard that a royal officer wanted to take the wine. Now, royal, let me just explain what that means. The government has the ability to basically grab whatever they like. That's where this is back in Roman times. The Roman officer comes to town and says, I'm requisitioning wine for the governor's party. That's exactly where the wine is going, and it doesn't matter whether it's from the seller or whether it's from the buyer. So I thought I was going to take delivery of this wonderful case of wine. I find out that the Romans are coming, and they're taking the wine. So I would like to, you know, get out of this purchase. I'd like to get out of the deal. So he said, give me back the money. I don't want the wine. He wants to get out of the deal. The case came to Rav Chisda, one of the sages, who said, just as they enacted the rule that delivery of the item is the last time for the seller to back out, so they enacted this for the buyer. He says there is a rule that, generally speaking, a purchase is only final when you take delivery. We talked about this last week. So that protects the seller in some circumstances, and it protects the buyer in other circumstances. In this case, you are allowed legally to walk away. You are allowed to back out because this would be a total loss for you. I should note, as in source number 13, that some say that's only true if it's a total loss that you're talking about. If it's a partial loss, maybe not. But a total loss is where you'd be justified in walking away on this basis. So again, to sum up what we've said, going a little bit quickly in the interest of getting through to our last topic, what we've said is, one is not entitled to cancel an appointment. If you cancel it in advance, there is one low-level penalty. If you cancel it on site, then you actually end up having to pay the person to be idle. What if you would suffer a loss by following through with your verbal commitment. So if the price is now better elsewhere, it is debated, with some saying no, you're not allowed to back out just on the basis of the price having changed. If the item would become entirely useless to you, then there may be grounds indeed for walking away, because that wasn't at all what you had in mind when you made the purchase. You wouldn't be getting what you thought you were going to get. Clear? I know it was a little quick, and I thank everyone for cooperating with this topic to just get through that, because there's so much to say. Regarding number 5, vying from Germany and Sudan. Yes, Stephen.
You show up at the appointment to sign time, you just need to apply the time you were received, the profession,
yeah.
And they haven't seen you. You add 5 minutes, and you cancel. You walk out.
Yeah.
You have a right to it?
So that goes a little bit back to the question about the employer's side of things, but you always have a right to walk out. Just realize that when you make your new appointment and you come back, you're going to start from zero again. It's the same everywhere. Good luck. I once did that. I once walked out after half an hour of sitting in the waiting room. And, you know, of course, just had to start from zero again next time. That didn't get me anywhere. But, yeah.